own words, said he is not knowledgeable about the economy. He's been in the Senate for 26 years. We're in the state that we're in, so why should we look now and make him our president in a time when the economic needs are so great? One of the things that he supported, for example, was privatization of Social Security.
He did support that, really?
Exactly. And
well,
if we would
huge
be
issue.
Privatizing Social Security, think of where we would be today.
Yeah.
Think of what would be happening.
We already don't have pensions. We already don't have health care. Social Security is the last thing we have left.
Right.
People would be without anything.
Most candidates, when they run for president, once they receive the nomination, they start moving towards the middle. What John McCain is doing is going to the right because he knows he needs to unify his own party before he can possibly run against the Democrat. What John McCain is doing right now is abominable from the sense that the positions he's taking are not where the American people is, which is why the American people, by and large, are saying right now, right today, that we're worse off today than we were 4 years ago, and they are unhappy with the direction of this country. If you want to change the direction of this country, you can't have John McCain.
Last question. Will we have a Democratic nominee prior to the opening of the Democratic National Convention?
I believe so.
You do?
I absolutely
You think we'll have the
superdelegates,
will make their decision, and we will have a nominee, 2025?
I think we can't predict on why that decision is coming about, because we still have many contests now and then,
sure.
And you need to see what happens in those contests. But
you think Democrats realize we've got to come together, that we can't be fighting in an ugly 1968-like convention on the floor, God forbid.
I think Democrats will come together because I think the way the system is set up is to make sure that we have consensus, that we have a direction.
Susie Turnbull, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside
sure.
Scoop. Folks, I hope you enjoyed it. I think you saw the breadth of Take Back America here. Everyone from Code Pink activists radically breaking the law to get their point across to Susie Turnbull, the number two in the Democratic Party, from outsider to insider, from intrepid investigative reporter to lobbyist for the People for the American Way. We are going to be on air again live tomorrow from this same conference with another motley collection, motley collection of progressive activists who really are all very much working hard. Everyone in this hotel is working very hard to get rid of the Bush era and to bring America a new era where we can finally dig out from the hole of that Bush era. Thank you for listening to live. I hope you can hear everything with all the talk in the room. Thanks to Guy James for giving me his microphone for the hour. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Will Pegora. Celebrating a time several hundreds and yea, in fact, more like a millennium and change ago, when a little English boy who grew to be a man and whose name was Patrick drove all the decent pagans out of Ireland and made it safe for foolishness. It's St. Patrick's Day, 2008. And so this is my wee bit of a pay-on to St. Patty's Day. Me, I'm sitting here all done up in me orange. Oh, that'll get me in trouble. No, but it is St. Patrick's Day. Agnes has some Irish in her. There's a scant chance there might be some in me. I don't know. But the kids wore a little bit of green to school today. My beer cans are green. Does that count? No Guinness these days. But Genesee? Nah, that's probably Dutch. But the cans are green. So, you know, I've done my part. Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, if that's something that you celebrate. A day of pagan mourning around the world the snake symbol was used to replace because it was holy to the pagans. Many pagan cultures had a reverence for serpents, and of course you've got the pre-existing hoopla against the legless ones that predates from bad translations of the Old Testament. So it's a celebration of the murder of my ancient Celtic religion. I have no idea what that religion is. No one has any idea what that religion is or was. But we do know that it got righteously suppressed by Mother Church, what, 1,500 years ago? With the rise of, the proselytization by, seriously, a little English boy named Patrick, who was kidnapped from England and wound up somehow or another after having the pirates do to him God only knows what. He became a priest and did his thing in Ireland. So happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Whoop-de-doo. Let's have a parade. But there's far more on the threat board, so to speak, this evening than green beer or green tinted milk or green clothing or green cheese, for that matter. Feminism marches on in Iraq. A female suicide bomber blew herself to bits today among a group of Shia worshippers near a mosque in Karbala. 39 people went to not see Allah. 54 continued their sojourn upon this planet with added measures of agony, misery, and persistent torment. Yes, yes, yes. Female suicide bombers. It's inspiring, isn't it? We're spreading freedom and democracy in Iraq, where women are now free to cast off their burqas and blow themselves into tiny bits and take a lot of other people with them. Yes, George, yes. Once again, everything you touch turns to caca, doesn't it? It certainly does. Man could screw up a one-car funeral. And really, he has, hasn't he? He's taken a one-car funeral, Saddam's, and turned it into a million-car funeral. All the civilians that have died because he said, Saddam tried to kill my daddy. This will not stand. Sickening, isn't it? There was no immediate claim of responsibility. However, that didn't stop the United States military from blaming Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Rock, rock, rock. The non-existent group that didn't exist in Iraq until George Bush invaded it. All local police are saying is that the attacker was, in fact, a woman. A liberated woman. freed from the cares of this mortal coil. Also today, I decided to lead with this because I don't very often. And frankly, we're coming up on the fifth anniversary. This war is already officially longer than the global war on fascism. It has cost us more money to conquer one little itsy bitsy country than it cost us to defeat Mussolini, Hirohito, and Hitler combined. And we still don't have the guy in the cave. In fact, we don't even know where the cave is. What's more, we're not trying to find the cave. Because we got these problems with Al-Qaeda in Iraq. It's a war for freedom, because no man deserves to be master and no man deserves to be slave. Except for me and my buddies. We're the masters. See, that's what we do. We sit around and bait you liberals, saying things like that. That's because we're masturbators. Sorry, couldn't resist. Two soldiers also died in Iraq today. Their Humvee was blown to bits by a roadside bomb. Because we still haven't figured how to deal with crudely fashioned, improvised explosives that sit along the side of the road. We are now up to 3,990 that we know of American servicemen and women who have died since George Bush started his hellish, hateful little war this time 5 years ago. The anniversary was marked by a little junket by Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney and George Bush clone John McCain-Turian candidate McSame, who took a trip to Baghdad. John McCain, however, couldn't go to the market to go shopping again, however. Did I say however twice? I'm sorry. This is on the fly. No, he couldn't go to that market that he visited in an effort to convince us all that Baghdad was just like a trip to IKEA. No, he can't go there because that market is now controlled by the Shia militia of Muqtada al-Sadr. And no white man in his right mind would go there. Now, that doesn't exclude John McCain, because he's crazier than a sprayed roach, but even his handlers wouldn't let him go marketing again. Because Baghdad just isn't safe. The McCain-Turian candidate said, "We recognize, I gotta work on my McCain, it'll take some time. We recognize that Al-Qaeda is on the run, but they're not defeated. Al-Qaeda continues to pose a great threat to the security and very existence of Iraq as a democracy. So we know there's still a lot more work to be done." Now see, this is all just print journalism, so I have no idea whether or not democracy. Did I just say democracy? Oh, Jesus, I kill me. Although I don't know how anybody could say democracy in Iraq in the same sentence and not do that. What a mockery. What a mockery of the word. What a mockery of the idea. You people are going to have democracy if I have to kill every last one of you little bastards to do it. Neighborhood security units set up by mainly Sunni Arab tribal leaders and a ceasefire ordered by anti-U.S. Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, they say, have contributed to bringing down violence in recent months.
Funny, I thought I saw another one of these bombing stories a week or so ago. 39, 54, hike, hike, hike. Hot route, hot route. Roadside bombs. And a minibus packed with explosives killed 4 people, including a policeman, and wounded 13 others in 4 attacks across Baghdad today. Regrettably, neither Cheney nor McCain were in the area when that happened. It's been a busy day here on the Horn. Very busy day. Both Guy James and Mark Levine are at the Take Back America conference. And what a great job they did. I was proud to be right here behind the board, seeing it all go out over the stream. Apparently, everybody who's anybody who's a liberal or a progressive is at the Take Back America conference, and I am green with envy. Maybe some other time. But they will be there again tomorrow. Guy will be back with us tomorrow, and then his regular schedule is going to be a little bit weird this week because he'll, I imagine, Wednesday will be a travel day, so maybe he'll be back for Thursday's show from his studio by the sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Mark Levine also, of course, will be there tomorrow as well. So that's where we are. By the way, just in the way of getting things started with some basic information, thank you to everyone who ponied up after Friday, between Friday and today, for our monthly fundraising goal. Thanks to you, we went from near $300 to near $600 for the month so far, leaving us on this St. Patty's Day, the 17th of March, only roughly $1,400 from our monthly goal. So, sincerely, we do thank you. Now, your thoughts, it's Monday, 2 days of enforced silence are at an end. You want to chime in? You want to get active? Is there something you want to talk about? One of Mark's guests sort of made my little pink ears stand up. The lady from Code Pink, who said that nobody knew that the Winter Patriot hearings were going on. And, well, this nobody knew. See, that's the uphill climb that the Horn faces. No matter how hard we try, no matter how loudly we say, listen, we're a resource for you. I don't think there's a guest on the programs on this show that doesn't get told, anytime you've got a message you want to get out, all you've got to do is pick up the phone. You know, we're that friendly an organization. We are that friendly an operation. And we are also that connected to a lot of activist-minded folks. You know who you are. But she was complaining that nobody knew about the Winter Patriot hearings. That's me, Bob Nobody. That's you, nobodies all across the country and nobodies all across the globe. The Winter Patriot hearings were fascinating. 3 solid days of soldiers who had returned from Iraq and wanted to talk about and wanted to say and wanted to be honest about the horror and hell and damnation that is that pathetic, pathetic place. Now, Mark's guest was absolutely right. Keith Olbermann wasn't there. Ted Koppel wasn't there. Tucker Carlson wasn't there. Tucker Carlson isn't anywhere, mercifully. Rachel Maddow wasn't there. Nobody was there, with a couple of notable exceptions. But that's the Iraq War. The Iraq War, for all intents and purposes, is being significantly downplayed at this point in time. The vast majority of the conversation on our side of the presidential debate is the economy and health care. And yet no one seems to grab the notion that the economy's not going to get any better until we get the hell out of Iraq, because Iraq is where the economy is. That beautiful, beautiful, well-oiled machine, that clock that was ticking away on perfect time at the end of the Clinton administration, got taken to Iraq and blown up on the side of the road. The Clinton era of peace and prosperity got fired into mud huts in Afghanistan and Iraq, and our surplus, which should have been locked away, should have been used to secure America's future, the future of our children, our grandchildren, our undreamt of great-grandchildren, was instead used to blow little children bit by bit and piece by piece into their constituent parts as death and destruction rained from the sky with munitions and with American flags painted on them, starting in March 2003. And yeah, Bear Stearns, they bid on the mortgage crisis. What do you think the mortgage crisis was propping up, huh? I was just thinking about that earlier. The mortgage crisis, the mortgage bubble, the home bubble, was the dodge that the Bush administration used to for a phony baloney economic scheme to make it look like things were still okay. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. Sad business. It's gotten so bad in Iraq that His Holiness, the former anti-aircraft gunner, has issued another statement. Pope Benedict XVI issued one of his strongest appeals for peace in Iraq on Sunday. His appeal came days after the body of the kidnapped Chaldean Catholic Archbishop was found near the northern city of Mosul, which I think sits not too awfully far from the ancient capitals of Nineveh and even the ancient palace of Sargon II. His Holiness is pissed. This is a quote, okay? I'm assuming, I don't know if it's translated from the Latin or the German or whatever, but he said, "Enough mit de slaughters. Enough mit the violence. Enough mit the hatred in Iraq." And that is taken, I guess, in papal speak as a really strong condemnation. On Thursday, the body of Archbishop Paulos Faraj Rajo was found near Mosul. He had been abducted on February 29th. Benedict said that Archbishop Rajo's death was an inhuman act of violence that offended human dignity. He praised Rajo for his loyalty to Christ and his refusal to abandon his flock despite many threats and difficulties. One wonders when Pope Benedict will get around to just telling the flat out, honest, unfly-blown truth about the occupation and the war in Iraq. One wonders when Benedict will say in plain, unflorid language that prior to March 2003, in that country which called itself Iraq, there was a vibrant, strong, ancient Christian community. A Christian community that was as old or older than any other Christianity community on earth. When will Benedict XVI say plainly to the world that that strong, vibrant Christian community which existed in Iraq was slaughtered on the orders of George W. Bush? When will the murder of the Christian community in Iraq on the watch of George W. Bush be condemned in the religion industry charlatan charnel houses of the Southern Baptist Convention and the megachurches? When will these hucksters give up the charade that is the failure to condemn Iraq and the occupation thereof and the war upon it and the phony baloney puppet government that we have set up there? Pope Benedict said Raho's dedication to the Catholic Church and his death compelled him to, quote, raise a strong and sorrowful cry to denounce the violence in Iraq spawned by the war that began 5 years ago this week. At the same time, I make an appeal to the Iraqi people who, for the past 5 years, have borne the consequences of a war that provoked the breakup of their civil and social life. Still don't get it, do you, Benny? The Iraqi people did not spawn a war. They have borne the consequences of it and the occupation, and it has broken up their civil and social life, and it has destroyed an ancient Christian community. But you have yet, Benny, to let the truth flow out of your mouth. And that truth, Benny, is that one man and one man alone is responsible for that violence. One man and one man alone is responsible for that breakup of their civil and social life. One man and one man alone has visited that death and horror and hell upon those who yet remain alive in the land between the rivers. One man, Benedict, one man. That guy whose apostle you are, Benedict, he wasn't much for mincing words. That man whose apostle you claim to be would not hesitate a second to tell the world upon whose hands the blood rests. Benedict, it's time to get all Jesus-y. Benedict, it is time to name George W. Bush for the monster that he is. Oh, well, instead, Benny played the faith of a child card in his homily. He said, to recognize God, we must abandon the pride that dazzles us, that seeks to push us away from God. To find God, we must learn to see with a young heart, one which isn't blocked by prejudice
und dazzled by interests.
See with a young heart. Well, Benny, there's lots of young hearts that have been blown all over Iraq. Pick one up. See if you can see through it, buddy. Until you get around to confronting the evil and confronting the problem, Benny, you're part of the problem. George W. Bush is the problem, Benny. It's not a failure of the Vision Thing. It's a failure. It's a failure of the morality thing. It is the triumph, Benedict, of the evil thing. Evil is stalking the world, Benedict. And as long as you hide from it and refuse to name once and for all the cause of it, you, Benedict, in your little lace dress, remain part of it. Any questions, Benny? Didn't think so. Didn't think so. Didn't think so at all. I mean, I'm not, this isn't about, this is, if it was John Paul, I'd say the same thing. If it was St. Peter himself, I would say the same thing. Because refusing to name evil as evil makes you a participant in the evil. Silence, after all, is acceptance. We'll be back, take a little musical interlude, and then take your calls, 304-658-3333 or 877-443-2366. Light them up. Welcome to Monday. This is The Horn. righty then. Okay, so it's about 25 minutes before the hour, and we will go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Did you hear Guy James' show?
I produced Guy James' show.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, he had an interview with Nancy Pelosi's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And something she said struck me as curious.
All right.
She said, when he said something to her about, you know, her mother being criticized, and he said something about impeachment, he was very, you know, very diplomatic about the way he was asking her. But she said, well, she could either impeach, do the impeachment, or she could end the war. And she'd been doing everything she could to end the war, but he was fighting her every step of the way. Am I quoting her right?
Yeah, you're pretty close.
And I had never heard that before. Have you ever heard that explanation before?
Sorta. Yeah.
Have you sorta?
I don't call that an explanation. I call it an excuse.
Either, but
yeah. I've heard that excuse, yes. I don't think it's got any validity.
I don't either. Because I just wondered if I was understanding it right, or if like I said, I've never really heard Nancy's explanation. If that's her explanation, I don't agree with it.
Well, I don't think that you can say that there's been just a real gut busting attempt to end the war on the part of the Democrats in the House.
It doesn't seem to me like it either.
They had an opportunity. You know, George vetoed a funding bill.
Yeah.
Gave him everything he wanted and then some.
Yeah.
All they had to do was say, well, George, we sent you a bill. You vetoed it. I guess it's up to, you know, you're going to have to deal with the consequences now. Mm. But see, that's the problem with George Bush. Nobody, Juanita, nobody, and I do mean nobody, has ever made him accept the consequences of his actions. Whether it was stuffing M-80s up frogs' butts when he was a little boy, cheating at tennis, whomping people with croquet mallets or whatever, driving drunk, running three oil companies into the ground, destroying the economy of Texas and its environmental standards and its educational system. Nobody has ever made that hideous man deal with the consequences of his actions.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree.
Sorry, didn't mean to yell.
I totally agree. I've read some things about his life story, and he's never been a success ever as far as...
No, everything he's touched turns to...
Turned to dust. I call it to dust.
Yeah.
Including our country.
Right. Wait, what is it? You remember the old story of Midas, King Midas?
Oh, yeah.
And he was cursed... Because of his greed, everything he touched turned to gold.
Mm-hmm.
Including his daughter. But then he found out that gold isn't everything. Well, see, George has the Midas touch, only it's a Midas touch of poo. Everything he touches turns to poo. It just goes completely rotten, completely vile, completely filthy, completely... just decayed and desiccated, and
yet he comes out with the books.
Oh, sure, sure.
In all of it. And his brother is the same way.
Oh, his brother will be the same as president. There's not going to be much different, if any, between George Bush as president and Jeb Bush as president. And Jeb Bush will be president.
You watch, I'm gonna trick it up.
I got two potential. There are two potential McCain nominees for vice president. Jeb Bush and Mike Huckabee. And whichever one is tabbed for vice president, if McCain makes it to the White House, either one of those will wind up president.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the thing is that if he does choose Mike Huckabee or whoever, you know, I don't think his health is going to hold out. And you know that they'll know that he's going to, you know, they're going to be president, and they'll appoint Jeb if he's not already been nominated, if he, you know. And then I'd be watching my back if it was me about them, you know.
If McCain becomes president, McCain is a marked man.
Oh, sure.
Not by our side. We don't do that kind
no,
of stuff.
No.
But he's, you know, he's
no,
not.
No, he'll serve his purpose.
Right. He's a pawn on the chessboard.
Right. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. But I thought that was very interesting that she said it could either be one or the other, and I never heard that. Maybe I missed that somewhere along the line, that was her excuse.
Well, that was one of them. One of the other ones is why.
Because
the president
hadn't got us out of the war.
I don't have the votes. I can't get it done. But how do you know if you don't have the votes, Juanita?
If you've said
that impeachment is off the table.
And you know, we as Democrats, we're not asking for perfection. We're not asking them to win every time. We're asking them to do it.
To fight
whatever
yeah.
comes out. We're not saying do it and win. We're just saying do it. Do what's right.
As voters, Juanita, we bought them the ticket. They wanted the ticket. We bought them
yeah.
the ticket. And it's up to them to take
right.
the ride.
Right. And, you know, they don't seem to get it or something. Somebody doesn't get it, you know, to stand up for what is right. Because to me, I think they're implicated by not doing anything. I think they're to blame because they know better.
And that's what I think. That's what the Code Pink lady, I forget what her name was, that appeared with Mark
yeah.
on his show. I think that's what she was trying to get across.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
in order to not have this blood on your hands, you've got to take strong action.
Yeah.
You got to do. You know, don't just stand there. Do something.
Right. And you have to even get anybody's attention in the least, the way the media is, it's going to be pretty drastic, and you're not going to get it very long either.
No.
It's got to be something like Sir, or you know, for them to dwell on it, or Brittany, or whatever, you know. And I think that they're as much as to blame, don't you think that they're as much to blame as he is? Because, like you said, nobody holds him accountable.
How do we not hold them? Well, back up. If we wind up with, for instance, telecom immunity for domestic spying, retroactive telecom immunity for previous lawless acts on the part of the telecoms, if we wind up with that, it will be as much Jay Rockefeller's fault as it is
yeah.
George Bush's.
Yeah.
Because he will have enabled George Bush.
Right. Absolutely. Well, they're all enabling him.
I mean, a quick trip to Al-Anon will straighten all of that out. If you are an enabler of an addict.
Right.
You're as much
they
a
problem. They all need a 12-step program.
yeah. Although, you know, I can almost see Jay Rockefeller sitting there. Hi, my name's Jay. I'm a Bushaholic. I've had to admit that I am powerless to, I forget what step one is, but I am powerless to control George Bush.
Yeah.
And it's just pathetic. People's lives are depending on this. And
right.
it's like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We are at 3,990. Before the week is out, we will be at 4,000.
Yeah, I don't bet.
And before 3 or 4 months are out, we'll be at 5,000. And before this year is out, we'll be at 6,000.
Yeah.
How many is enough? And, of course, this doesn't count the people Did you follow the story, Juanita? I think I covered it briefly last week. The beautiful, beautiful young girl, I believe her name was Lauren Burke. She was a student at Auburn University, and she was murdered. And she was murdered by a young man who, his mama said, and this is a near quote, just ain't been right since he come home from Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
The Pentagon grudgingly counts the soldiers who are killed there.
Yeah.
They don't count the follow-ups. They don't count the guys who commit suicide by cop.
Yeah. Well, they also, I understand, they don't count the ones that die off the battlefield.
You know,
that are injured and then die later.
Yeah, that was just bad luck.
Yeah. Well, not to make anything personal, but some people I know, they look like they're all right, but they're not. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, sure. And the wives and the husbands and the fathers and mothers and children who hear the screaming of returned Iraq veterans in the night, and you know, mommy or daddy, they don't have a bullet hole in them.
And they're not away from it, you know, like some of the other wars, you know, they have it continuously. They're living in a battle.
Yeah. And then to turn around and send people back who are already shattered. This is going to be the greatest, it's going to turn out to be the greatest military disaster this country's military may have ever faced,
right.
Juanita.
Right.
From a little pissant war that should never have been fought in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine, the Bush administration has screwed up Iraq so thoroughly. Can you imagine how they would have handled something like World War II?
Oh my gosh.
and then to have George Bush come out. Did you see this at the end of the week? I saw it on Friday, and it was all. I kept trying to get to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And yet every time I clicked over to it and started to do it, I had to pull back because I was dumbstruck by it. I was struck mute by it when George Bush called Afghanistan a romantic fight for freedom.
He said he would like to, if he was younger.
And if I was a younger man, I'd be fighting there myself.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam.
Yeah, right. And the fact of the matter is, I kind of decided that rather than ranting and raving on it, what I wanted to do was to ask people who had served in the United States military honorably in Vietnam to express their opinion about that.
Yeah, yeah.
If I was a younger man, I'd be serving there too. I guess Vietnam wasn't romantic enough for him.
No,
Juanita.
I guess not.
No swirling strings and a stirring soundtrack and a lot of dum da dum da dum da dum da dum music.
Yeah. I apparently not.
How romantic was Vietnam for the 55,000 names on the wall? Is that where it is now?
Something like that.
How romantic was that? How romantic is it today? When the guy in the snazzy military costume shows up with his white gloves on or whatever, so he can knock on the door and tell some woman that the child that she nurtured in her womb and fed and clothed and bathed and doctored and sent healthy to the United States military has been wasted, Juanita, wasted in this idiotic occupation.
Yeah. And while they're doing their little political games, and I'm including Democrats, while they're doing their little political games, these people are suffering.
They keep dying and dying.
Not just our people, but the people over there. And if they don't care about anybody else, why don't they care about our people? But I guess if they don't care about anybody else, they don't care about ours either. It's just the way I see it.
Well, they don't care about ours that aren't of their class.
But And you know, with Bush, you would, you know, I thought after the 2000, when we had that, I thought he would be embarrassed that he didn't get the popular vote. See, they thought he was so cute and fun that he would get the popular vote, but he didn't. But you know what? He had, that man has no shame. He has no shame whatsoever.
No. But he's never had to have any.
Big, huh?
Why do you need shame when everybody always covers for you?
Yeah. I mean, you just can't believe he has no shame. But I found it out. You know, I found out. And I know it was his right. It was his right to take away the presidency. That was his right. And I had people all around and people on the TV saying, oh, we've got to get our government in order. We got to get this settled down. You know, including so-called liberal media types, such as Cookie and some of those other folks.
I know.
And I'll never forget the way they acted. Oh, nobody likes Gore. Just people just don't like him. They don't say I don't like him.
Yeah, they it's always somebody else that didn't. Right, I understand.
Yeah.
A little tough to stomach, isn't it?
I wrote that Margaret Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
I said, of course she didn't answer her in anything, and I don't doubt if she read it. But I just told her, I said, don't you feel bad about saying what you think and you don't know what the American public is thinking? And, you know, it was about that. And I said, you're as guilty as anybody. I forget now what else I said, but I don't know. It's like when I had, I remember when they were going to do, who was our great district attorney that quit?
Spencer?
The one that can't remember anything.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. No. Attorney General.
I have written.
Yeah. Fredo Gonzalez.
Yeah. I have written Bill Nelson. I said, please don't vote for this man. You know, and
no, I remember when his confirmation hearings came up, Juanita, and a brand new freshman senator, a Democrat that we thought we were happy to get, Ken Salazar of Colorado, got up and just about did for Alberto Gonzalez what Monica did for Bill in introducing him to the Senate. It was disgusting.
Yeah, don't they do some disgusting? But I got an email and he said, well, I voted because I thought he was the best man for the job.
Yeah, I know.
But I haven't heard any apology about it, you know, that, oh, I was mistaken, I was wrong.
I know. Juanita, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have yourself
thank
a good
you
Monday
for
evening.
Me vent.
Oh, you're. Yeah, this is a freestanding stovepipe. You can vent all you want.
Okay.
You take care now.
You have a good evening.
All right, and bye now.
Bye.
And let's see if somebody is still here. Yeah, looks like. Hi, who I got?
Hi, me.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I'd like to carry on Juanita's topic a little bit.
Sure.
If anybody has not already done so, go to the head-on main page, and there is a or just put the term Winter Soldier in a search engine, and that will take you to a site where you can view streaming video of the Winter Soldier testimony.
and see and hear the horrors for yourself.
Word of advice: make sure you have a box of tissues handy.
Yeah.
But you should do it if for no other reason than these people are getting up and they are risking their very freedom by what they say in order to put a stop to this insanity.
Right.
And the least we can do is listen to them and know what really goes on. And it's not pretty, people. It's ugly. It's
bloody and it's brutal and it's vile and it's sinful. I mean, there's a real definition of sin that I'm willing to deal with. You know, yeah, sure.
You put people, young kids, in there into a situation they cannot handle, they're not equipped emotionally to handle, and they just, me, I call it collective insanity. That does not take away their responsibility for what they have done. Because some of what they are talking about comes under the heading of war crime, and they know it, but they can no longer live with themselves without speaking up. And the American people need to know what's going on.
If they can be bothered to pay attention.
Get away from American Idol.
No. The American people have real and legitimate reasons for having their focus shifted elsewhere. At one point in time, Bear Stearns stock, Susan, traded for more than $110 a share, I think.
Yeah.
Friday, it was trading for 70-something a share. Sunday, it was sold for $2 a share. And the shareholders didn't have so much as bupkis they were allowed to say about it.
I know.
So the American people who have, you know, lost their retirement plan, lost their homes, lost cars, lost
their
jobs. It's not all American Idol anymore, is it?
Yeah. No, it's not. And now you know why I'm not keeping any money in the bank.
Keep the money in the mattress.
Exactly. I put just enough money in the bank to cover the checks I write within a very, very short period of time. It goes in the bank just long enough for me to write.
But see, the truth be told, this is not a banking issue. See, something like Bear Stearns was called an investment bank or an investment house. Bear Stearns is the evil harvest of something that we have sown for 20 years now. This idea, once again, you know, at what point do the American, and maybe it's not the American people, at what point do our elected representatives in government stand up for us to these bunko schemes that they call deregulation? Let's see if I can just tick three off real fast. Okay, deregulation of the airlines. We used to have a working airline system. Now we don't.
Yeah.
Deregulation of investment banking. Jesus, you know, you can buy a mutual fund share at the Rippy Mart now. It's so deregulated. And let's see if I can find one more. Quick.
Telecommunication.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, okay. Keep going. I'm sure there's another one. I had one right on the tip of my tippy little tip of my tongue.
Utilities.
Enron.
Yes.
Can you imagine if George Bush had gotten away with his Social Security piratization scam, where we would be right now, Susan?
Welcome to 1929.
Welcome to 1934. You know, because that's, you know, by 34, it was getting ugly.
Yeah. But I see the Bear Stearns thing as the top of a very, very shaky pyramid that's starting to collapse, and it's going to take down the whole system. And that's why I won't keep my money in the bank. I won't do it.
Don't blame you. Don't blame you, not a little, not even a little bit.
Because sooner or later, it's going to take out the actual insured banks. And past a certain point, you know, sure, the government can say it's your money's insured. But what happens when the whole system goes down? If you get a penny on the dollar, you'll be lucky.
Yeah. I don't think that's where we are. We may not be far from it, but I don't think that's where we are. I think we're, this is, like I said, this is a bitter fruit that is being reaped from 20 years of sowing. See, going back into the hateful Reagan 80s, for instance, more than 20 years. It was the phony
office and fired.
Yeah, the Patco. But it was the phony baloney scam to inject retirement fund monies into the market that created the sense of an economic recovery during the Reagan administration, so that he could say, hey, "Will, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?"
Uh huh. And it basically just covered it up.
Yeah. So some of this is incumbent upon the American people, Susan.
Yeah.
Some of it is our job, and it's our fault for not being loud enough and militant enough. Do you remember the tapes? Do you remember the tapes that they found from the energy deregulation scam, where energy traders used to giggle about gouging grandmas?
Yeah. And nothing ever came of it.
No, nothing did. But time after time after time, we see deregulation, and we see what a failure it is.
Yeah.
The only thing is, wait. There's one more thing. The Bear Stearns guy, the guy who was CEO of Bear Stearns, his total compensation in the last numbers we had available were 2006. Lottie in the chat room rounded these numbers up. The last numbers we had for him were 2006, and he made $16 million change base salary and a total of 30-some-odd million with deferred compensation, and quite possibly his take this year on Bear Stearns was 80-some million. $80 million.
Talk about a scam.
$80 million to run a company into the ground. And, you know, I don't know. He might have to be a Judas goat. He might have to be a sacrificial lamb, so to speak. But it's not likely. And he's not going to suffer. It's a point that I tried to make a few nights ago.
That money's all been moved out of the country.
The caviar crowd is not going to suffer.
Hello.
Now, granted, his deferred compensation isn't worth much right now because it was in shares of Bear Stearns stock, but his cash payout was plenty nice. He won't be on relief anytime soon, and he won't be singing, "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?"
Well, it's just like Bush, Cheney, and all of those. You can bet your bippy, not one of them is going to be singing "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?" because they got all of their fortune moved out of the country and out of the dollar.
I know.
And they can let the whole house of cards come down, and it's not going to bother them a bit.
There's that line in "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?" where the guy sings, "Once I made a railroad, made it run on time," or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. The character in that song had made something. He had done something. He had created something. These guys, and these hustlers at the top of these phony baloney investment houses don't do anything. They don't make anything. What's the Bible say? They neither tarry nor do they sow.
I like the term leech.
I like the term bunco artist.
How about vampire bat?
Con man.
Yeah, con man works real good.
Fraud, Ponzi schemer, pyramid schemer. The only difference is that we, by virtue of that hateful process, hustled by the Repiglicans, deregulation, it's the free market at work.
Horse pucky.
Yeah, they just made it. They just made the scam legal.
Yeah.
That's all they did.
And you know what's really ironic? These Republicans, they glorify the man of the West. You know, stand on your own 2 feet and all this jazz. Huh? In the old West, they'd have been strung up from the nearest tree. Because the old West, they didn't like bunco artists any better than anybody else, but they had a real good cure for it. It was called rope.
And yet, you know, those hardy, self-made, tough individuals of the old West were anything but. Where would Western farmers be without taxpayer-supported dams and irrigation on rivers that don't need to have it on there in the first place?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm talking about the early ones, not the ones we got now. You know, the ones where you ended up walking across the country.
He was a man so mean he once shot a man for snoring. Yeah, those types, yeah.
John Wesley Hardin.
Oh, God, what gets stuck in our collective zeitgeist? Time Life Books brings you the Old West. There's that one and the one that Agnes hates, where they did their mystical UFO spacecraft thing, and the tagline for that was always, read the book. And every now and then Agnes will mention something kind of spooky, and I'll look at her and she'll say, don't say it, Bob, don't. Read the book.
No,
tough living with me.
I got the Hardin thing, though, because I was fascinated by him as a kid, long before the Time Life thing came out.
We had a similar guy. I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up. But he had terrorized the entire area around where I grew up.
Oh, yeah, and he was finally caught. He owned some land out the hot springs.
I'm not sure, but what happened was when they caught him and hanged him, he said something at his trial. You know, we're going to have a nice fair trial, and then we're going to hang you. One of those. he said, well, nobody ever runs over and gave his name. And instead of burying him in the cemetery, they buried him in the middle of what became Tennessee Street.
Yeah.
And hundreds of cars run over him every day.
Yeah, I know his name. It's on the tip of my tongue. I just can't think of it. He was a real famous outlaw.
Yeah, he was a horse's ass, too, but yeah.
Well, all of them were. My God, you don't think Billy the Kid was anything nice to you.
No, not at all. Nor, I saw the Brady Bunch episode about what a bad man Jesse James was, too. Back when Bobby was having his fascination with Jesse James.
Yeah, they were all basically psychopaths, but, yeah.
Yeah. But, how did we read the book? Susan, it's top of the hour. Well, it's past top of the hour. I'm going to run.
Okay.
All right.
My love to Agnes and the kids.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Somewhere in these Chiricahua Hills, no white man will ever know where, the Apaches buried Cochise. The greatest are their great chiefs. See how it sticks? It's terrible. I tell you, it's terrible living inside my brain. We'll take a little musical interlude. You can chime in if you want to. You know the numbers. 304-658-3333. 877-443-2366. Either one works just dandy. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
was a fun first hour. A couple of good conversations. Let's have some more if you feel so inclined. And let's, you know, I got to figure out how to make this comprehensible, but for those of you who are interested in such things, I did create a horn pool for the NCAA basketball tournament. I know. Oh, Bob, why are you talking about basketball? Because it's fun. March Madness is fun, that's why. Some people like American Idol. I like the March NCAA basketball tournament. It's more fun if you've got a team in it, and my beloved Mountaineers snuck in somehow. I mean, 26 and 7 on the season, or 26 and 8, that's not a shabby season. They drew a number 7 seed and wound up playing Arizona in the first round in the Western Division. Hey, there's a kiss of death. But we do well in the West. We've gone to New Mexico and Idaho in the past and done quite well, thank you very much. It was fun. So hopefully we get past Arizona. Then we get to face Coach Mike Krzyzewski and Duke. I'm going to have a hissy at the first person who writes to tell me that's not how it's pronounced. The minute you find an SH at the beginning of that name, I'll call him Krzyzewski. But that's because I loathe, well, you know. But, I mean, it's like rooting for Duke's easy. That takes nothing. It's like rooting for UNC. I mean, yeah. So what? I mean, where's the drama? You know, root, be a fan of Butler. No, not Butler. Especially not Butler. Be a fan of Gonzaga or one of those other bizarrely named schools. There's some fans for you. But anyway, I know, I hate it, but it was what popped up for me. So somewhere over at Fox Sports via MSN, I set up a pool called Horn Pool, capital H, capital O, capital R, capital N, space, capital P-O-O-L, Horn Pool. And the password for getting into it, because it's a private group, don't make me play by myself. Oh, see, that was so close. Don't make me play by myself. The password is Bob Kincaid, all little letters all run together. B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. Join in. It'll be kind of fun to see who, I don't know, a toaster for whoever comes out best. Let's go to the phones, see what we've got. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing, man? Guy.
Hey, Gary, how's it going?
Okay, great, great, great. One thing I like about America, because I do have some issues with America at times, like you do.
Yeah.
Is I do believe, you know, I've traveled a little bit around the world, and I do think we have the greatest, like, sports culture.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, you know, what about the Manchester United fans? Come on.
Well, I'm talking about they're passionate, but I'm saying in terms of a buffet. You know, we have, like, college sports. You know what I mean? You got basketball. We got, you know, I'm more of an NFL person.
There's no fan like a Cubs fan.
That's right. You got baseball. I just think we have the biggest, like, you know, greatest sports culture, I think, in the world. Me personally. So it's something you can just.
I love this time of year. I love the conference tournaments, and then to get into the NCAA. There's no better sporting drama than that. Although, you know, I go more for I follow college sports more because it's just, I don't know. I like the college basketball game better than the pro game because it's not necessarily who has the ball at the end of the game that wins.
Yeah. Plus better coaching and better fundamentals than everything else you probably can throw in there, too.
I'm all excited because I'm hoping the boy and me will get, now that the weather's getting better, we'll be out in the yard working on his arm. And we've been throwing baseball together since he was old enough to stand up and hold one. And that's one of the nice little rites of spring and little leagues coming. And you know, I think it'll be fun.
Cool. Anyway, so let me start off with my first rant, and then I'll go to my second rant.
All right, just set them up and knock them down.
Real quick. First rant. Can I say idiot over the line?
Oh, you can say idiot all you want.
Okay. Anybody who watches Fox for any length of time is an idiot. And I'm going to tell you just why, just my quick observation. Unfortunately, I'm sometimes in a situation where I have to listen to Rush Limbaugh or see Fox TV against my will, a.k.a. the gym, because they have all the TV sets and, you know, they're turning all the different news channels. And, you know, you're sitting there working out, and I'm going to tell you about 5 o'clock today, and then I noticed again at 7 because I checked the channels again today. The main story should be, you know what the main story should be? Bear Stearns getting the bailout. Basically, they're getting ready to go under. That's the main story, the stock market and everything that's going on in the credit market.
Yeah, reasonable by me.
Yeah. Now, we're heading toward a recession or a very severe recession. Not just a recession, but that should have been the lead story. Fox News, both at 5 o'clock, and I know it's again, like I said, at 7, because I said, I'm going to see if they're going to do it again. They are talking for 15 minutes on their opening segment about Obama's pastor.
Oh, Lord.
For 15 minutes. I can see it was like four. For 15 minutes.
That's a 20-second reader, Gary, if it's that.
No. They are scared to Dickens that a Democrat is going to get in the White House, whether it be Obama or Hillary Clinton. And you know, they are pissing in their pants. And I think people need to look at this stock market and start to understand that these people, this is where I'm going to lead off from that to my second rant. My second rant is all these free market people who talk about people on welfare and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And my question, Bob, is why does Bear Stearns need somebody to help them out at this point?
Oh, you just asked the $64 million question.
See, they won't talk about that. They'll keep talking about this free market. Oh, let the free market go, free market. But when they get in a little bit of hot water, or when they're about to lose their pan, then all of a sudden, oh, Fed, come, please, Fed. Hello?
Yeah. You're right here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, you know, that's just such big hypocrites. You know, it's really just...
Well, let's take it another step further. They're not just hypocrites, Gary. They're babies. Because the fact of the matter is, they're racists, and they are classists. You know, every time you talk about taxes, or someone in Congress mentions Bush's tax cuts for the rich, Flush Flimball screams, "Class warfare!" Well, there is a class war going on, Gary, and my class is losing. Because the fact of the
matter... My class has been losing for a long time, so...
Okay, sorry, my bad. Yeah. Yeah, cry me a river, right?
No, we're all the same boat, Bob.
But no, seriously. I'd like to see on a graph or a pie chart or something or a Venn diagram that a simpleton like me could understand. I'd like to see a comparison of how much money the Bear Stearns bailout cost compared to, say, West Virginia's food stamp outlay for the month. I'm guessing Bear Stearns probably cost more than some states' food stamp layout.
Well, they estimated it's actually $2 here. I think it was $250 million, what I saw quickly. Obviously, last year, the stock is now down $2 a pop. The stock was $176, I believe, last year, which is a lot for an investment bank, because investment banks really don't make a product.
They don't do anything. Yeah, that's what I was talking about with Susan.
Yeah. So anybody who had a share that was for $176, $176 for a company that doesn't really make anything, it's kind of crazy anyway, you know? That's just too high a price. They should have been somewhere around $20, $30 at the most. I mean, hell, Apple is, what, at $180-something. So it was really an overpriced stock from the beginning. Yeah, they had a lot of capital in.
And yet, you know, in the buyout, if I understand it correctly, Gary, it's not only the fire sale, the $2 a share that J.P. Morgan Chase picked it up for. Funny how there's always somebody around who's healthy.
Well, it's always like the Chase people, you know. They go way back to the Depression. I mean, you know, they're terrible. But anyway,
not only was it that, but isn't there a federal guarantee in there somewhere? Isn't there a federal guarantee of people who are invested with Bear Stearns?
Yeah, that's supposedly the bailout. What Farino came out today and said, she said basically from the look that I said that guy, the inside guys, can push their money around and actually hold it. Because what I heard is that even though they came out and said, we're going to buy $2 a share, the shareholders can say, no, we don't want that deal, and wait for another bidder to come along. So basically, it seems like they're going to get the both worlds. You know, they're going to have it fairly insured, and they can get a higher price later on down the line. So basically, what I understand it, Bob, is the federal government is buying this thing, and then it could actually go up in price.
Isn't the federal government more or less buying it for J.P. Morgan Chase?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And J.P. Morgan can bid higher. My understanding is they can buy it, supposedly. The shareholders can say, no, we don't want that price, and make them bid higher, which means the federal government would have to even pay a higher price than the $2 a share. So it's not just a bailout. You know, it's a triple bailout.
It's a subsidy.
It's a subsidy.
Wait a minute. There's another word I'm looking for, Gary.
Welfare.
It's welfare.
It is.
Now, some mama out there, white, black, or Native American, or whatever, who's trying to feed a family of four, if she gets a block of cheese and a package of macaroni and maybe a little bit of butter, well, she's a welfare queen and a drain on society. On the other hand, if we go out and buy a few cases of Ocetra caviar for the Lark's Vomit Canapé set on Wall Street, well, that's America doing what America needs to do. I hate this, Gary. I'm sick of it, aren't you? I mean, doesn't it just make you want to just kick furniture at some point?
I don't know if I'm apathetic or you know, I look at things in terms of prophecy or things are just going to happen. You know, sometimes I just feel like the way things are going to go, they're just going to go. I think we've kind of written our path. I mean, maybe we can try to do something to change. So I don't know how mad I can actually get, because I don't know being mad is going to actually change anything. You know what I mean?
I don't think it will.
It's almost like I almost kind of wish they stopped bailing people out and just, I'm not saying I hope to see the whole situation burn, but you fall apart or something. But
well, let's put it this way. If you and me, we go to Vegas.
Yeah.
And we're standing at the crap tables.
Yep.
And we crap out.
Yep.
Is the federal government going to stand there and say, wait a minute, I'm going to pay your chips for you. You didn't lose anything.
No, they're not going to do it.
No, they're not.
I've had a business where, you know, I lost money. I was fortunate enough to, you know, come back on it, but I never got a bailout from the government. You know, I still had to pay the IRS, whatever I owed them, and, you know, whatever. I never got a bailout. Never asked them for one. I just manned up and tried to pay what I could. And it just, that's what part picks me off, because these guys, they almost kind of know. I think they kind of know that they can just be unregulated, do whatever they want to do, and know that down the line this deal going to get over. You know, it's you know, I'm reading that book. I went and got the book. He told me to get free lunch, so I do have that. And you know, going through it, can't really read that book if you're in a bad mood.
No. That's one of those where you read the same paragraph three or four times, just trying to soak it all in.
I mean, I could probably go through it pretty quickly because it's not really a big book, you know, but I was looking at some of it and I said, I'm going to put this down and come back in about a couple of days.
And in a way, it's probably just as well that you're doing that, because it's not something that's easy to stomach a whole bunch at a time. When it gets laid, when the ripoff gets laid out that plainly in front of you, it doesn't feel very good. And no, I don't think, Gary, that getting mad does anybody any particular good. But doggone it, what does it take? I guess that's my question. What does it take to get our elected representatives, not our leaders, but our representatives, to start representing? Not representing the Bear Stearnses of the world, but representing the people who are now making choices between $4 gas and $4 milk. What does it take? I mean, these people were the ones who wanted the free market. If they wanted it, for the love of God, let them have it. And let them go belly up, and let them go bust. I'm sure there's some economist out there saying, well, Bob, you just don't understand what that really means. I mean, that could mean jobs. But there aren't any jobs. What, you know, where was Bear Stearns' money? that it all went belly up. It was in the phony baloney housing bubble. That's where it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a lot of stuff. I mean, they all got, you know, they got, you know, they really got greedy. They, you know, they really just, I mean, I saw it happening. I watched it for the last couple of years, and I used to talk to people on the phone about it, and they were like, look at me like I'm crazy. I'm saying, no, you guys don't understand. This is a disaster coming. Now they kind of see it, so, you know, it's like not down with some forecast or whatever, but you could just see, you know, just things weren't making sense. People buying houses, million-dollar houses, who are only making $70,000 to $80,000 tops at a year. I mean, you can't afford a house at that price, at that salary. It was just...
And look at what was constituting a million-dollar house, Gary. 1,500 square feet, three bedrooms, two baths? That's a million-dollar house?
Well, I have a more sinister point of view about it. Now, I'll take it even further than this. I actually think there was some class race stuff in it. I think the fact that they were attacking, you know, the subprime to, you know, and I could be wrong about this, but this is my conspiracy theory was, for example, like Cleveland, Ohio, and other places like that, not just middle America, just, you know, white America that has lost a lot of manufacturing jobs, but a lot of these black areas who are getting hit hard now are being disenfranchised, just like Katrina. And these people are just not going to be motivated as a political group anymore because they're getting hit so hard. And it's the same thing with, you know, a lot of the whites in Kansas and all these other places. They're just totally now immobilized because of all the financial stress that they're catching.
And yet, even though what you described is absolutely true, bear in mind, Gary, that there is somebody there who will come in and snap up a so-called bargain on these foreclosures, and they'll get the house for closer to what its actual value was and turn it around and do the hoodoo on somebody else.
Yep.
Or have I got it wrong?
Well, they're not going to let a possible profit center sink anywhere in this country. A house is a profit center the way they see it. So they don't look at it as a home. So yes, you're right. They're going to figure out some kind of way to turn that thing back into a profit center for them. You can count on that one. Question is, how long it's going to take them? Did they overstep their hand? That's why I'm kind of like, I hear people saying, oh, you know, Democrats and all the situation going. I'm starting to wonder, have they made such a mess that even they realize they have to correct it and do the right thing? I don't know if that's the case, but one has to wonder, do they realize some of the stuff they've done is so damaging that they have to kind of get to grips with their greed and decide, look, we need to get back to doing things in a correct manner. I don't know if they're there yet, but that's what I'm kind of wondering.
But let's say for a minute that you've got a bunch of refis in a traditionally black neighborhood, and by virtue of the refis or the outright subprime mortgages, you get to take control of those neighborhoods. What are you going to do with that neighborhood? I mean, anybody who's ever played Monopoly knows that after you've put the houses on, then you put up the hotel, right?
Yeah.
So you take a traditionally ethnic neighborhood, whether it be ethnic Poles or ethnic Germans or African Americans. And the next thing you know, you've got a nice, ugly little case of, oh, what's that prettied up word they use for it? Gentrification. Where something that used to be a working class neighborhood gets restyled and rebuilt and sold to yuppie somethings.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's like New York and all other different places. Almost any city you can go to in this country, you can do a go around. You'll see a lot of those urban neighborhoods. A lot of the people, particularly blacks, but also the older whites, are being moved out toward the suburbs. And I've always thought that's because, you know, with this coming oil crisis, it's just going to be a very expensive. First of all, food's going to be more expensive out in those suburbs if they stay with this model of, like, you know, shipping food everywhere. If they're not going to get into local markets, then it's going to get expensive. And those urban areas are going to be more, more in vogue because you don't have to drive. You don't have to use a car in the urban area. You can walk.
Right, because we can reinvent the walking city.
I mean, you look at South Africa. That's how South Africa did. You know, they pushed them all out into the little shanty towns or whatever, and, you know, and
and down in the hub of the city, that's where the people are. So in some ways, we do have a little bit of an apartheid coming here, but it's not really just about race. I think we have to get beyond just the race thing because, right, this is more about class. It's not about whether you're black or white. It's whether or not you have money or you don't.
That's the thing. There is a philosophical determination in the upper levels of the money in this country that the job of the poor people is to give everything that they have to the rich, and that the rich are entitled to whatever the poor have scraped together, so that the rich can then develop it and profit from it. Our national religion isn't Christianity, Gary.
I'm sorry?
Our national religion isn't Christianity. Our national religion is capitalism.
Okay, well, God is our supreme being in this country. I mean, their supreme being, not mine, but I'm saying that's really the legacy of this country. I mean, the business of America is business. I forgot who said that.
Coolidge,
yeah. You know, and now it seems like it's extreme business. I mean, it's a whole nother level. But I just don't really think people understand really the severity of what's happening at this point and what's coming. And unfortunately, I think it's at a point where you actually need a revolution. I actually don't think, unless you throw everybody out of Washington, I mean everybody, you're going to have really fundamental change. Unless these people have, like I said earlier, have decided the way that we've been doing things is incorrect and we need to have fundamental, you know, change or whatever. I think, you know, what these people are really going to do, whoever gets in, whatever, in my opinion, it's going to go back to the same thing of, well, I got mine, so I'm just try to, you know, keep what I got. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I had a conversation with someone the other night, just off air, babbling along, and I was looking at the map of the United States, and I said, in 100 years' time, what was once unthinkable is entirely possible. If you look at a map of the United States, it is imaginable that within 100 years' time, geographically, this country will Balkanize. And you will see the states, the old Confederacy will come back. New England and New York and PA and Jersey, maybe Ohio, West Virginia, Maryland will Balkanize. The Midwest, Washington, Oregon, California, that kind of thing. Because there's going to be a fundamental turning in the question of how governments respond to the needs of their people. And no government can run on the rich, because the rich don't do anything, Gary.
The bank got 15% dividend freaking income, and like you said, they get tax cuts, which they don't need. You know, and then, you know, we keep getting hit with more and more taxes for every little thing. Then you turn around, we get these little incidental taxes, which is really the gas. I mean, rich people don't really have to worry about gas too much in terms of when you actually equate it with their income. It's not a big hit for them, where, you know, proportionally to their income, whereas for us, it's a major hit. So when you look at it that way, they're continuing to get richer and richer. And like you said, man, this thing is... Sometimes you saw the movie Soul and Green, obviously, right?
Oh gosh, yes.
You know, every time it keeps popping back in my mind. This country just seems like it when you think about it. You know, it just seems like we're going that way. You know, it just seems like I went and bought some juice the other day, and I drank the juice, Bob, and I could tell that it was watered down. And I've been noticing this when I go buy things. It's like the package is a little bit slimmer than it was before. And it's these little things you see, you know, it's like, say, wow, you know, people really are starting to cut back on quality. You know, this country really is going back.
Because part of the dodge is that you sell something to someone for the same amount that they used to pay for it, and you give them less.
Yeah.
I remember when a half a gallon of ice cream actually used to contain a half a gallon of ice cream. But now, if you want to buy something that's supposedly all natural, like a Breyers, it's a quart and change, but it's still the same price that you used to pay for a half a gallon. When was the last time that a 3-pound can of coffee had 3 pounds of coffee in it?
You know what you might want to buy? If they put nitrogen on the market for
as a commodity or stock you can buy. You might want to start doing that because, you know, they put nitrogen and chips and everything to keep everything fresh.
Right.
That's what they shoot it up with. That's why when you see those bags, it's like all inflated. And when you open it up, it's like half empty.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me to invest in a couple of tanks of nitrous oxide and just laugh my way to the apocalypse.
No, I'm just saying that they're probably going to put more and more of those things in those potato chips and those M&M packages and whatever else for preservation.
It weighs something, doesn't it?
Huh?
It weighs something.
Well, I mean, I pick up those things now and I shake them and it's like, I can tell this thing is half empty. It looks like it's full on the store shelf, but when you grab it, man, this is nothing but air. But then you'll be the back, oh, no, it's not air, it's nitrogen. To keep it fresh, though.
How many people think about this kind of stuff, Gary?
Only me.
No. Not only you, but the number of people who do is it's a small number. The rest go merrily along. Get me a half gallon of ice cream at the grocery store. And they never look.
But you know what I think is going to happen, Bob, when you say that I think. One day, some guy somewhere, I don't know if it'll be me, but he's going to go to a store. He's going to pick up a pack of potato chips, and he's going to get by and pay whatever price for it. He's going to have a little bit of potato chips. He's going to open it up, and he's going to get so pissed off that he's going to be the guy that starts the revolution. I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be some small little thing that some guy just says, that's it. I can't take it anymore.
And there's a great likelihood that you're correct.
And yeah. Everybody can start marching toward the White House, you know what I mean?
on potato chips. Because it's not the great big stuff, the great big crises that drive us over the edge. It's the little itty-bitty ones that are just like getting... Yeah. You'd rather be hit with a rock than stung by a bee, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. The guy just wanted to eat some potato chips one night. You know, he didn't have any health care or whatever. Try to get some potato chips. That's the story that's going to be written, you know, in the history of our country. It's going to be some guy who bought potato chips, and he just went crazy. And he just started walking toward the White House, and people joined up, and they heard his story, and they just got pissed. I mean, it probably would be just that minute, because clearly through the media machine, we won't get no revolution that way. You know, it's going to have to come somewhere very, very, very organic, because this media machine, man, they just... Oh, God, if I see anything more about this race stuff than this race.
Well, what was amazing about the Obama preacher story, though, is did you catch what William Crystal got caught in today? He picked up on this story from this goon at Newsmax who said that Barack Obama was in the pews in the church on July the 22nd when Pastor Wright delivered his Hate America speech. That's what they're calling it now, his Hate America sermon. And published it as gospel fact. William Crystal picked up on it, published it in the New York Times as, again, gospel fact. And there's only one problem.
It's a lie.
Barack Obama was delivering in a speech in Miami that day.
He does that. That guy, that Crystal, I think he's been busted on a couple.
He has, and he's only been at it since January, and he's already got rung up a couple of times.
Yeah, he got ran up on something else recently, printed a lot. I mean, he is so bought and paid for that I don't even pay too much attention to anything he says, but you're right. This whole story last week, what happened was, from what I understand, just watching this thing, they were going to try to make a big stink out of it, because they're concerned now, because they think that he may win, I guess, or whatever. But now,
Gary, they had to have something to balance against Geraldine Ferraro. Okay, I sat around waiting all last week after the Ferraro flap started. What are they, you know, okay, okay, so that was, what's the other half of the soap opera? What are they going to gin up to balance Obama's coverage? You see what I'm saying? And they found the perfect thing in this phonied up, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, stupidity over a preacher's remarks. Listen, anybody who takes anything coming out of a pulpit with anything short of a tablespoon of salt has got coming what he gets.
Yeah.
Because preachers get worked, and they'll say some stuff. I mean, I remember when a couple of preachers were on national television and said that 9/11 happened because of the secularists and the humanists and the liberals and the queers.
But what about McCain and Hagee and Pagel? Those two guys, both of them. Well, Hagee said that they call it basically the Catholic, you know, religion. You know, pretty much, you know, the great whore or whatever he called it. And then Pagel running around talking about New Orleans deserved what it got.
Sure.
I don't understand. Where's that commentary
coming? Hagee said Adolf Hitler was an agent of the Almighty. And I have yet to hear anybody wearing that out in the so-called professional media. So if a preacher somewhere along the way says, and if we do not address the needs of all of our citizens, God may damn America, you know what? He's probably right. Martin Luther King said the same thing. But
well, I've listened to Mike Malloy. I've even heard your show sometimes. Trust me. Some of the stuff Jeremiah says, you know, and I think to me he probably went overboard. I mean, I'm not really a person for having politics in churches, but I've heard this stuff on a lot of radio stations. He says some stuff that pretty much was talking about the plight of people and our government failure to respond. I mean, you know, we can criticize this country. You know, I'm an African American. What a lot of people don't understand is that even though we love our country, it has not been a perfect marriage for us. We were brought over as slaves, you know. We were enslaved, and we still suffered racism at end length for a long period of time. So for us, it's like being married to an abusive spouse who finally has found their way, and we love them, but that don't mean we can't criticize them. And I think that's in a broader context where we have to look at it. And I hope that some whites understand that there are a lot of people, unfortunately, from the 60s, who got hit over the head and went through a lot of crap, and they're still mad. You know, Jeremiah Wright's obviously one of them. And I think we just need to get past this race.
I don't know that what Jeremiah Wright said was wrong.
No, I don't know what he said was wrong. What he said was absolutely correct. What I'm saying is that, for me, I don't like that kind of language. I mean, personally, in a pulpit, I don't like political language in a pulpit. I mean, some people say, well, that's where you're supposed to be. But I think that's on a Sunday morning, I just don't think that's probably the place. You go to, like King did. King would do that, but I used to listen to King's sermons. He would go to the halls and to the steps and other places to criticize the government. He really didn't come that hard that often from the pulpit.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Go check out that Riverside Church sermon.
Well,
I'm
saying not always. Yeah. That was one. I'm saying, but not always. He had this thing where he tried to, like, keep it out of there, but he fought with it for a long time. A friend of mine, he did his dissertation on King and Malcolm X. That's the one thing he always told me. He said King really did struggle with that, about, you know, his service to God and country and where those two things.
But, you know, I'm reminded Jeremiah Wright's first name is go read the book of Jeremiah.
I'm reading it now.
In the Old Testament. To deliver a stunning, stirring rebuke of something evil even has a word based on that. It's a Jeremiad or a Jeremiad. It is a boisterous indictment of open wrong.
Yeah, Jeremiah was put in prison. I mean, the whole story was about him. He was put in prison all the time because he kept telling the kings of Judah and all of the time, he was telling them, look, this, all these bad things are going to happen to you because you're not, you know, doing the will of God. So yes, Jeremiah Wright, in a sense, is saying, hey, what this is what, you know, in the context of who Jeremiah was, the same thing. I mean, Jeremiah, like I said, was thrown in jail. He was put in the dungeon and drowned underwater for a while. You know, they put him underwater.
They waterboarded him.
Yeah, they waterboarded him, basically. They did everything to him, and God delivered him out of that situation. His belief of what brought him out of that situation. But I just think, me personally, I do think that there has to be some kind of separation of church and state, and I'm just concerned that when I see on the Republican side, I see all the evangelicals who just drive me crazy. They're bringing too much religion in it. That's why I say I'd rather not have Jeremiah or other preachers doing that, bringing it into the church. I'd just rather keep it simple. That's me. I'm not saying that it's wrong, but it's just...
No, I get it.
Too much religion in our politics.
I mean, when you see language like this, this is from Jeremiah 17:13. O Lord, the hope of Israel, all that forsake thee shall be ashamed, and they that depart from me shall be written in the earth, because they have forsaken the Lord, the fountain of living waters. You know, as for me, I have not hastened from being a pastor to follow thee, neither have I desired the woeful day. Thou knowest that which came out of my lips was right before thee. Be not a terror unto me. Thou art my hope in the day of evil. Let them be confounded that persecute me, but let not me be confounded. Let them be dismayed, but let not me be dismayed. Bring upon them the day of evil. Now, wait a minute. You know, bring upon them the day of evil and destroy them with double destruction. Thus said the Lord unto me, Go and stand in the gate of the children of the people, whereby the kings of Judah come in, and by which they go out, and in all the gates of Jerusalem, and say unto them, Hear ye the word of God, ye kings of Judah, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem that enter by these gates. Thus saith God, Take heed to yourselves, and bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it by the gates of Jerusalem, neither carry forth, blah, blah, blah. But they obeyed not, neither inclined their ear, but made their neck stiff, that they might not hear, nor receive instruction. And it shall come to pass, if ye diligently hearken unto me, saith the Lord, to bring in no burden, yada, 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 yada. Then shall there enter into the gates of this city kings and princes, sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses. They and their princes, the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, this city shall remain forever. And he goes on and says, But if you won't listen to me, well then, I will kindle a fire in the gates thereof of Jerusalem. And it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched. Not exactly a mealy-mouthed prophet, was he?
No, neither was Jesus. That's why he crucified him.
Yeah, lo, I come with a sword.
I mean, people don't really understand. Like, even if you study, you know, you read the Bible, so you know what I'm talking about. Like Paul, I mean, those guys got beat down when they went there. So they obviously were not saying things that people liked. They probably, I'm pretty sure they might have been at the point of cursing these people. So, I mean, you know, when you go to a church and they actually start a fight when they chase Paul and I think it was Peter and a couple other guys out of there, and they had to run, they had to fight them off, they were not saying things that were complimentary to the people of that time. So, you know, the fact that these people get mad and all upset should not really surprise anybody or, you know, or change anything. But, you know, like I said, you know, situation just is in this country at this point that this religion thing is just getting too caught up in our politics, and you just got to try to, you know, get these things back separate, because the people in this country know that the rich people know the way to really get over on us is to use religion to blind us. You know, that's just what they want to do, and get everybody jumping up and down talking about Jesus gonna save you and all this other stuff. You know, and the fact of the matter is they're coming right by and taking out your pocket. Even Jesus himself said, watch out. You know, he was talking, you know, telling the widows, watch out for these pastors who come and thieve the houses of widows, I think I said in the Bible. So, I mean, this is what's happening. You know, these evangelicals are basically being just duped, you know, and the religious people are just being duped.
And that's the point. I mean, what do you, and I know your feelings are probably similar to mine and as are most of the folks listening tonight, but which is more evil? Letting children suffer and go hungry and homeless, or letting a couple of guys pick out a China pattern? I mean, it seems like a real no-brainer to me, Gary.
Yeah, but Republicans don't really... I'm not saying all Republicans. I'm gonna say this in terms of it's not necessarily Republicans. It's a certain element that's a mindset that's in our country that to me actually is not. If we really study the Constitution, you really study and understand it. One thing I always tell people that's American, I don't necessarily love America. I love the ideals of America, you know. And I think that's what a lot of black people tell you. They'll tell you straight up, no, I'm not infatuated with America as it is now. We're always trying to reach for a more perfect union. But there are some people, like they say, you want to call them the status quo, who like things just as they are because they've gamed the system to their advantage. And like you said, they're taking advantage. They're living off the work and sweat of others and not paying their due share in this democracy that they so-called are benefiting from. That's not declaration that they're going to, you know, follow the Constitution and be fair to this country. But right now, we really don't have the perfect union that we think we have. We have this, you know, this kind of illusion that, oh, you know.
We have an idea of America.
You'll get an idea.
And that's the thing. The Republicans, and I had someone email me earlier today and point out the fact that Republicans aren't in love with America as America is. Republicans are in love with the idea of America. And the idea doesn't match the reality.
You know, it's like, that's what drives me crazy when I hear, like, poor whites who are always focusing on blacks and Mexicans or whatever taking that job. And I try to talk and say, look, what African American owns that many corporations to actually set policy to take X, Y, and jobs from your community? What African American brings guns and, you know, owns gun manufacturing and brings guns to his own community? I mean, there's just some basic common sense stuff that white Americans, unfortunately, should just understand. And they live in this, unfortunately, a lot of them live in this illusion of America. I mean, you have to come to grips with the fact that America was stolen back from the Indians, and that, you know, we have a very tarred history. And we got to stop looking at things from this rose perfect ideal and say, wait a minute, this is what it is. These are the mistakes we made when we started this country. But this, we can still get to where we started out at and go forward if we're honest with ourselves and willing to put aside our differences to work for a better union. Unfortunately, we get caught into this, like, feminine, woman, like, gender stuff, and then you get caught up into the race stuff, identity politics.
And we get caught up in everything but the economics of it, Gary, because the whole game, and I mean from the foundations of this country as a colony forward, the whole game has been to keep poor people separate. As long as you can get poor whites to feel like they're being threatened by poor blacks and get both of them to hate the Indians, then the people who control everything know that they're safe because they're going to fight amongst themselves instead of finally turning on the people who are causing the problem. Again, this character at Bear Stearns, it bears mentioning again and again and again. This guy at Bear Stearns made $16.7 million in 2006, this Alan Schwartz. And he didn't do a darned thing. He didn't do a blessed thing, Gary. He could, he can't do anything. All he can do is shuffle numbers.
You know what the average last year, I think it was last year, I'm pretty sure last year, or maybe the year before, the average bonus was the employees of Bear Stearns? I'm saying the average.
No.
$6 million. Now, obviously, that's because some guy was making millions and millions, but that was the average. So the average, you know, employee or, you know, executive level employee was getting an average of $6 million.
Well, here's the total compensation. Here's the compensation package for Alan Schwartz. Total annual cash, $16,487,150. Total short-term compensation, same number. Other long-term compensation, $19,247,272. Total calculated compensation for 2006, $36,734,422. And I simply ask, as a guy who's done some things in his life, for what? For what did he get paid that money?
Moving money around.
But he didn't even do it well. He ran his company into the ground.
No, they basically, I mean, I think there's legitimate points for, you know, my sister does investment banking. There's people who, you know things that can really help you out if they're honest. But Bear Stearns was basically, at that point, last year, they were just moving money around. Musical chairs, taking these loans and throwing out these. They knew the loans were bad, and they're trying to sell them out to the Japanese or any other company or anybody else that they can switch them out to, and they got caught holding the ball, basically. They couldn't get rid of them. They thought they were going to be...
Yeah, the musical chairs, the music stopped in the musical chairs game, and they didn't have anywhere to sit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the other thing...
But you and me, we got to bail them out, Gary.
Yeah, Yeah, and then the question people don't understand, okay, people say, well, okay, how is this going to affect me? Okay, people, listen to this. Start watching. If you got a loan with any bank, pay it off, get, because you're going to start to see little fees that you've never, ever, ever seen before. That's number one. Number two, of course, they're going to hit you with the taxes. Number three, they're going to hit you with food prices, because from what I understand, whenever the Fed does this kind of stuff, and I'm not like no person about economics, I'm not, but I have heard this, that for some reason, whenever they do this, the Fed does this, they pull back on some of their subsidies, so some of their, you know, farmers and other things like that, they start cutting back, and it ends up trickling down into like food prices and basic needs that people need. So you're going to start seeing things go up due to this bailout, that you're not going to wonder, well, why is food going up? You know, not just gas is going to affect food, but this bailout and other stuff.
The value of the dollar is going to affect it.
That's what I'm saying. All this stuff. So you have three things now pushing food prices higher. So there's like, nobody can say now. They keep saying, oh, a recession ain't coming. Well, you could say that if it was only one thing, like we just talked about the Bear Stearns thing, but you got three things going on. You got four things. You got the war. You got oil. You got the credit system, the housing market credit system. And then there's one other one. There's so many I forgot. But, you know, that's why, you know, we know a recession is coming. But if you put those four things together, it means a depression is coming, not a recession. Because a recession usually only has one or two of those markers. We've never, ever had really oil as a major market except in the 70s. You know, and even then, that was kind of temporary. But now, dollar, like you said, is moving over to the euro. They're not going to stop that train. That's not...
No, and you know, it takes real rapaciousness to create a depression. It took, I mean, balls to the wall, grab every last scrap that you can get, hustle every penny you can hustle, the economic scam art to make the last one happen. And you've got to have really, really unscrupulous economic monsters in power to break an economy the size of that of the United States. The unfortunate side of that, Gary, is that we do have really, really unscrupulous economic monsters in power.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I said, does this sound familiar? You know, somebody said something a while back up in about a couple of years ago, I read in a magazine. It was a rich person. It was still interviewing these rich people, taking pictures of. And the woman said something that just stuck out of my head. A lot of people of my class realize America, its riches is going to get. That was like about a couple of years ago. She's just making a point that America has hit its plateau in terms of wealth. That everything else now is going to be from down here. That is why every time you listen to these economic shows, they're always talking about emerging markets and overseas. They're not interested in America anymore. They feel like it's tapped out, and they're going overseas to, you know, Brazil, China, and all these other places. And they're leaving America behind. That's just what it is, you know. So I think, you know, people need to stop worrying about whose pastor said something. Geraldine Ferraro, whatever her name is, not running for president. Hillary Clinton is, so we should not be concerned about anything she has to say or Jeremiah Wright. We should be listening to these candidates and finding out what they really are about. And if they're not right, throw them out too. and pull a third candidate in. I mean, seriously, I think we're at the point now we just cannot afford.
If we could have Al Gore on the second ballot at the Democratic convention, I'd be so happy I wouldn't know what to do.
I don't care who they put on it, as long as the person is committed to doing
the right thing
that need to be done.
Yeah.
Bottom line, I would go for Hillary if she can prove to me that she is serious about fundamentally changing Washington. That's what you had to prove. Same thing with Obama and anybody. If it was there, I'd say the same thing. You can't just get up there and pretend like, okay, this is some little show, I want to be president and play president and everything. You got some serious issues here. And I can tell people right now, you can go ahead and vote for McCain, you know, because you don't want to vote for a woman, because you're scared of women, you don't want to vote for a black man. But trust me, it's going to come back, and you're going to wish you had voted for that black man or for that white woman.
That's the thing I can't figure out, Gary. What the terrified white people, are they afraid that, you know, Obama's going to get into the Oval Office and the first thing he's going to do is start writing those reparations checks? I'm not kidding. At the end of the day, is that what they're afraid of? that the African American culture in this country is in the scope of 4 or 8 years going to reverse 400 years of racism? I mean, if that's the case, let's go ahead and elevate him to sainthood, because it's been a while coming.
Obama whoever gets White House, with the mess they're getting, if they can't fix it, they're going to wish they never got in it.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. Please bear in mind, Democrats, unlike Republicans, Democrats age in office. And by the time Hillary or Obama are done, they will be old, broken people. Because they will work at it, and they will try, and it will matter to them.
Not where he stressed it all. You know?
Well, good gracious. You know, granted, Ronald Reagan's mind was as rotten as it was rotten when he got out, but the man looked younger coming out than he did going in.
Oh, man. I tell you one thing. If Obama or Hillary Clinton was in office and did the things George Bush has done, they would have had them in jail.
Democrats would run them out.
Yeah, they would have ran them out. I mean, they would have been just totally ran out. This guy.
I remember when Joe Lieberman stood up and excoriated Bill Clinton. You know, for stuff that wasn't any of Joe Lieberman's business.
That guy. See, to me, is Washington. That's what I keep telling people. Don't get it twisted, people. Look at Joe Lieberman. He's a guy who the people told him what they wanted. He went against them, then he went independent, and he still is even going against his party. Now, you know, he's just so Washington to the core, and there's so many people in Washington who are just like him. It's like you can never get these people out of office. There's always enough dumb people to put people like Bush back in office. And that's what really disturbs me about this country, Bob, because, you know, we sit here and talk about all this other stuff, but there's just too many people out here who listen to Limbaugh, Fox, you know, who are just idiots. They really are dumb. I mean, it's just amazing to me how some of the stuff they say when they call in, some of these other talk shows, you know, the little right when they call in and make their point.
Mm-hmm.
They have no point, no merit to stand on, but they just keep saying stuff that just doesn't make sense. I'm talking about people who sometimes are college educated.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And it comes down usually to what you said before. It comes down to some fear factor or some kind of little personal issue that they have. They can never get past themselves to look to see the greater good of the country. It's always like, well, I saw my situation, Siri, and it was because I saw some Mexicans down the street when I lost my job, so they must be taking it. but wait a minute, you worked in what? What kind of, are they any Mexicans? That's how you think. It's just like.
Yeah, I know.
God.
I know. Hey, Gary, have a great evening.
All right, let's go.
Good to hear from you.
All right, bye.
Take care now. Bye. Love my conversations with Gary. It's about 8 minutes past. If you're on hold, I implore you to please remain there. We're going to take a quick break and come back to more of your phone calls. 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333, 304-658-3333.
As I was slowly passing an orphan's home today, I stopped for just a little while to watch the children play. Alone, the boy standing, and when I asked him why, he turned with eyes that could not see, and he began to cry. I'm nobody's child. I'm nobody's child. Just like a flower, I'm growing wild.
No mama's arms to hold me, no daddy's smile. Nobody wants me.
Nobody's child.
are places just like this, with rows and rows of children, babies in their cribs. They've long since stopped the crying, as no one ever hears, and no one's there to notice them or take away the fears. Nobody's child, nobody's child, just like a flower, they're growing wild. Got no mommy's kisses and no daddy's smile. Nobody wants them.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
12 minutes past the hour. Nice little break there for just a moment. And we will go straight away to the phone. Hi, who have I got?
You have David.
Hey, David, what's up?
I just wanted to say a few things regarding darkness and light and all of that.
Okay.
To me, if you take away the greatest tragedies, you won't have the greatest beauty. And if you take away the greatest beauty, you won't have the greatest tragedies. And without those... Without those
things, yin and yang.
Yeah, yes. Without those things, though, Bob, this is what I keep telling people. Every time I talk to people, it's always the fear of what's coming rather than the actual reality. The fear of what's coming. But it's never going to add up to that picture unless we all collectively influence it to add up to that picture. That's what we see. And when you said, and what really got me is when you said, people don't know what the reality is. Well, you know, part of me wants to say, Bob, that I'm surprised that people don't know the reality 40 years ago. It's a lot of disinformation. And to me, Bob, it's like a lot of times I think about these things and I think that how do I know what I'm saying is true? Because I read it? Because I'm experiencing it? Is this my perception of truth? And after a while, I just have a struggle and I have to face up the fact that this is my take on it. This is my view on it. And I guess I can understand why anyone goes a different direction. And that's how I deal with anyone who goes a darker path than I do or as I see it.
Okay. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry, all better now.
Yeah.
David, I understand the yin and the yang concept.
Yeah.
But there's always a but, isn't there? There's tragedy, and there's great tragedy and great beauty.
Yeah.
And there's the great tragedy that we can't avoid, and there are those that we can. And the ones that we can avoid, we should.
Well,
because of the intense human cost and human suffering that follows them, or ecological suffering, which leads to human suffering, or, well, go ahead.
You know, I've been thinking about that for some time, and I've realized that all of the things that we went through in this world, in this universe, if we took that away, would we be better people? And I don't think that's... I think it really has to do with growth. And with growth comes pain and horror and misery and famine and injustice and hypocrisy and racism and everything. Because that's what we're all meant to deal with. And unfortunately, that's what you get, Bob, when you have free will. And that's what that's the times we live in.
Yeah, but David, there are places on this planet where a human being's skin color is no more paid attention to than earwax.
Bob, if I may, let me give you an example of something that my parents are now dealing with.
All right.
Sad reality, please report to Deck 1. Sad reality, you will be departing shortly.
All right. This is a sad reality, but it's true. My dad has a friend named Skip. He's a veteran of Vietnam. He's been through it. He's seen it. And he's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. On his refrigerator, I don't lie, people. I'm not a liar. On his refrigerator are pictures of George Bush, like he knows this man.
Ish.
Like he loves this man. Like he worships this man. And this guy, I don't know how many tours he did. I don't know how many years of service. But my dad and Skip are like two peas in a pod. I have to deal with the fact that those people, as good-hearted as they are, just chose the wrong path and leave it at that. Really, that's the choice you have. And, I mean, I can get... See, here's the thing, Bob. I can get self-righteous about anything. But when you take a step back and look at it and realize, yes, the people in power are influencing us, but ultimately, Bob, it's all of our choice. The people on the sands are shooting right now at the supposed enemy, but it's their choice. They're pulling the trigger, ultimately. It's a manipulation is what's happening. It's a mass manipulation, of course. A deception, yes. But ultimately, it's our choice. The same choice where someone comes up to me, I've had this happen before, Bob. Someone tells me about the plight of homelessness. The plight of homelessness. Why don't you care about the homeless? You don't realize we could do this for the homeless and the homeless that and homelessness and all the places where they could live. And then you ask this person, how many rooms do you have in your house? And they tell you, well, I have about 7 rooms. How many rooms are you currently using? Well, I guess I have 2 spare rooms. Bing! Okay, why don't you have homeless people living in your house if you're so concerned about them? This is what happens, Bob. Real silence comes across, and this is what I'm telling you.
Crickets, man, crickets.
Yeah, crickets. And you know what I say? This is what I say. I confront myself with it every time. You know why I don't have homeless people in my spare room? I'll tell you why. Because I have a perception of being scared of people who don't have something, who have nothing to lose in a place where I have a little something. And I think that's how we all feel.
It's and see, you're talking about the same confrontation,
yeah,
that you get in I guess it's the Book of Matthew,
right,
where the really really rich guy comes up to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and says, you know, I follow all the commandments, I'm very good, I'm very righteous, what do I need to do to achieve salvation?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus doesn't miss a lick, he doesn't miss a beat. He says, go and sell everything you have and give it to the poor and come and follow me. And all that the book of Matthew says is that the man went away sad. Because he wasn't going to do that.
Bob, I heard this to make it related. Do you know who the first grifter was?
Who?
The snake in the Garden of Eden. I heard that and I was like, that's genius.
Yeah, because he was. Well, there were some who would say he was the first grifter. There are those though who would say that he was the first honest, honest living creature, or the first honest consciousness, because he didn't tell him a lie.
Right. But he tells, now
we're dealing with this as if there was a snake talking to a woman, 8,000 years ago, which of course is BS, but. The story, however, has various levels of meaning. He said, if you eat from the tree of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil, you will become like gods. Something like that.
And you know, Bob...
And she ate, and she did.
That's why I believe in shades of light and darkness. And a lot of
people, I'm all over gray.
You know, a lot of people get riled up, though, Bob. They don't understand that if you take away that darkness... Light's not going to mean anything anymore. It really is not going to mean anything anymore to you. It's going to be like an episode of The Twilight Zone. You're not going to see it as light. You're just going to go numb.
Yeah, it's the mobster who goes to hell and he wins every game. He rolls sevens and elevens and he says, I don't know, this heaven could get old. And the guy finds the snapper at the end. He says, yeah, who said this was heaven?
But I just wanted to say that, and I have two other things that I wanted to mention. The first thing I wanted to mention is there's a story. And see, here's an example of the insanity that we deal with in this world that doesn't make any sense. There's a story in France of a woman who wants to die. She's severely deformed. No joke, no laughing matter. But she does look like she's had makeup from her in the George Lucas department.
Oof.
Seriously, it's really that bad. The fish monster. That's the only thing I can equate with. I'm not making fun of her or anything. That's the way it is.
No, you're just using the language and it's descriptive. Sure.
Yeah. And she can't die because the French courts won't let her. They will not give her lethal drugs. She's a mother of three. She's been through it, and she just wants to die because she's severely disfigured, and she's a school teacher. Does it get any worse than that?
That's pretty much piling on.
I know, and this is what I say. But here's the thing. Here's the crazy thing about it, is that a lot of us we look at something like that and we depend on, or a lot of us are programmed and taught that the doctors are the ones to prescribe the lethal drugs. Like there's no other alternative than to just to go to the doctor if you have that kind of life. And I'm not saying she should off herself. I'm just saying that when you're programmed like that and you're in that direction, that's what puts you in that box, so to speak, or the prison. And I don't know what I would do in her situation, but if her kids, I guess I would do this. If her kids understand what she's going through and they all equally decide, then I guess, like Malcolm X says, by any means necessary, if the courts said no, Bob.
But how? Well, they're saying no, they won't give her lethal drugs, though. They're not saying no, you can't kill yourself.
She can't die. That's what they're saying. She doesn't have the right to die because here's the issue.
Well, they can't do much about that if she's determined.
I know that's the other thing, but they can mess with your mind mentally if you're really in a psychological state where you're just going mad inside your head because you're dealing with the conflict of. It's the conflict of killing yourself, basically. But I just wanted to mention that story because I thought it was interesting.
It is. It is very much.
And I don't have an answer for it, and I can honestly say that. I don't think anyone who would think about that for a while really does have an answer. And I wanted to give it from a different side of the world instead of focus on America.
I know.
The other thing I wanted to mention was a lot of people are looking for documentaries. And makinguseof.com has put together a whole list of where you can find documentaries on the internet. And I think it's a good list to look at.
Makinguseof.com.
Makinguseof.com. I think it's a good list to look at. And I think anyone who is ever wondering where do you find this stuff, whether it's to you, directed to you, or whether it's directed to me, this is a good reference guide for you. They put a lot of research into it. I've looked at some of the links to it, and these guys are really know their stuff. And I would look at I would look for resources for documentaries next time, and pay attention to this site because I'm sure you're going to find a lot of stuff that you never thought you would ever find in your life.
I love the stuff that's out there, and it's, you know, there's the network within the network, and that's the people who find stuff and share it out that makes the internet's worthwhile.
Right, Bob, and that's another thing. That's why we have to keep mentioning those accesses that are currently there, that are putting that stuff, that are putting their lifeblood out there, just like you're doing. But it's just one door to another door to another door to another door. But I think it's important to mention this stuff because I don't know what inspiration that's going to come from when those people witness whatever it is that they're going to witness. You don't know that in the world, and that's what I like to say to people. So a lot of times I don't think you should hold on to these great sites and this great information. Just realize people put a lot of time into it, and also realize that the web server costs, a lot of these things are astronomical for them, and
yeah.
If they're not getting noticed and they're not getting any kind of mention, they just fade away. So I wanted to mention that because I saw that on dig.com, and I thought it was relevant.
Makeuseof.com. I'm going to go and browse it this evening.
Okay. Don't worry, Bob, if you can't find the exact link, because it is a link that there is a date entry to it. But like I said, if you can't find it, I will be happy to give you the exact link to it.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot, David.
No problem, Bob.
Thanks for your thoughts.
Later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our pop culture and culture in general correspondent, David from Maine. Rolling onward. Oh, rats. Yep, that's what I thought it was. You'll have that. You get a busy signal once in a while. Can we have a lighthearted moment? Kind of started out a little tough, actually, talking about the occupation and stuff. And I can't just... There's some stuff you can't just let go up above the rim and let it bounce harmlessly away. It has to be jammed home. And for me, one of those today was this comment by Dana Perineal, the White House. Ladies, will you get mad at me if I call her a spokesbimbo? Can I do that, please? Because, I mean, she's, you know, this is the woman who didn't know there was a Cuban Missile Crisis. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer, if you know what I mean. And this comment about men and the military, I saw it today, and she did? And it's just, it's astonishing. She shows up on Fox News Sunday, Dana Perineal does, because they've named her the Power Player of the Week. J. gee, I would have thought that the power player of the week would have been somebody out of one of the, you know, conference championships. There's a hell of a lot of fine power players coming out. Stop it, Bob. And Fox News Sunday, of course, is hosted by that miserable little blivet. Email me if you don't know what a blivet is. I'll be happy to explain. That's B-L-I-V-E-T, blivet. In some cases, B-L-I-V-I-T. Oh, it's 5 pounds of poop in a 10 pound, it's 10 pounds of poop in a 5 pound onion bag. Okay, that's a blivet. She explained, let's let her do it for herself, for heaven's sakes. Why not? Well, mainly because sometimes the, dadgummit, you know, you'll have these kind of things. So, let's try this again. Here we go. The life of Dana Perenil.
The White House spokeswoman during a war.
Some of the terms I just don't know. I haven't grown up knowing the different type of missiles that are out there. Patriots and Scuds and cruise missiles and Tomahawk missiles. And I think that men just, by osmosis, understand all of these things. And they're things that I really have to work at. And to know the difference between a carrier and a destroyer and what it means when one of the...
Holy cats. To know the difference between a carrier and a destroyer. My mom knew the difference between a carrier and a destroyer. I think if you sat down and asked them, probably, because that's a pretty wide dichotomy. One's really huge and has a bunch of airplanes on it, and the other one is relatively small and doesn't. But did you catch that? Like I said, we had to lighten it up just a little bit, didn't we? I haven't grown up knowing things. The type of missiles. Patriots and Scuds and cruise missiles and Tomahawk missiles. Well, she just rattled off several of them. But that line, see, that's why I asked your permission first, ladies, to whether I could call her a spokesbimbo. That line right there, this line, takes the movement for women's equality back flipping decades. And I think that men, just by osmosis, understand all of these things, and they're things that I really have to work at. First of all, it's demeaning to women. Second of all, it's demeaning to men. Yeah, we're out. You know, us guys, we come, you know, we go out of the womb, born, and we know how to destroy things. That's all we're really good at, destroying things. Just breaking things and tearing them up and murder and mayhem and rape and pillage. Yeah, that's a guy's life. You know, you're barely born, they lop a chunk of your Johnson off, and away, there you go, you're all pissed off for the rest of your life, and you just want to blow stuff up and make missiles. Osmosis, quick. Working definition of osmosis. This is going to take S-M-O-S-I-S. And there it is, right at the very top. Men learn about missiles and blowing stuff up and trying to destroy the planet by osmosis. And girls don't. You know, that's because, you know, boys are snakes and snails and puppy dog tails and, little girls eat ivy too, wouldn't you, or something equally stupid like that. Yeah, girls just learn these things by osmosis. Yeah, great email. But Bob, she can tell you anything you'd ever want to know about the Ronnie Ray gun myth. Okay, yeah, well, I knew I'd piss off somebody. Spokesbimbo, dumb, And this is a female writing to me. Spokes bimbo, dumb C word, equals stupid bitch, equals crazy, another C word. It's a guy thing that need to, oh, well, never mind. I didn't say anything. No. Because if there's anybody out there who's pissed off about the fact that one side of the debate is, hey, yeah, but she's got a vagina, and the other side's going, yeah, but his skin's brown. Idiots. But in the end, I do get some agreement. She's not qualified. She needs a handler. And that's true. She can be an idiot without reference to gender. But here, let me have my Geraldine Ferraro moment, okay? Does anybody think that if Dana Perineal was, like, eaten up with some horrible skin disease and uglier than a mud fence and not all perky and pretty and blonde, that she'd have the job she has? And that applies without reference to gender. Because as soon as Tony Snow started turning gray, his ass got out. Because he wasn't what he had to be. Oh my God, this just bears, you know, hearing a little bit. Yeah.
But another problem surprised us, being the White House spokeswoman during a war.
Some of the terms I just don't know. I haven't grown up knowing the different type of missiles that are out there. Patriots and Scuds and cruise missiles and Tomahawk missiles. And I think that men just,
and Cuban missiles,
by osmosis, understand all of these things. And they're things that I really have to work at, and to know the difference between a carrier and a destroyer and what it means when one of those is being launched into a certain area.
We're launching destroyers into areas now. Wow, she really doesn't know anything about missiles, does she? If only we were in a time of peace, and because she knows a lot about decorative wall sconces, lots and lots, and she knows about scrapbooking, and she knows about the planting bulbs in the lawn, or actually having the little underpaid Mexican plant the bulbs in the lawn. She knows lots about that. She knows about going down and bailing out her husband when he gets busted for mouthing back a DC park cop for letting his dog do on the national park. Knows a lot about that. Sometimes it just hurts. And the flap over Obama's minister, so what? Oh, but in the running for, and I'm sorry, we have to gender differentiate on this because there's just too many nominees. It's kind of like best actor and best actress. You got to have a category for both because there are different skill sets. In the running with Dana Perineal this evening for most hateful female of the night is Michelle Bachmann. You remember Michelle Bachmann, don't you? Michelle Bachmann is that hateful, uber-right-wing repiglickin' from Minnesota. Now, this is the one who said she was proud that Minnesota had more people working three jobs than any other state in the country. And that just makes us, that makes us an especially godly state, don't you know? So she decided to praise the troops. You got to praise the troops. You got to get up in the morning, you get up and you praise the troops. You stop a little bit before lunch, you praise the troops. About the middle of the afternoon, where most parts of the world take a siesta, you praise the troops. Shortly before dinner, praise the troops. Praise the troops right before you brush your teeth. And right before bed, praise the troops. Because it's, you know, with the Republicans, the least you can do is praise them, since you're not actually doing anything for them. But yes, Michelle Bachmann did declare that God is on our side. This is the quote. "What our servicemen and women have accomplished over there has been nothing short of astounding, though you never hear about it in the media. God has not abandoned us. Guess he kind of abandoned the Chaldean Catholic Archbishop near Mosul there, didn't he, Michelle? Well, he's not one of us. You never hear about it in the media, all the good things we're doing. 39 people dead today because feminism has manifested itself in Iraq with women choosing to blow themselves up. We tried to tell you about the feminism. Oh, cue Patsy Cline. Crazy. Speaking of crazy, despite the report that came out last week that after, from McClatchy, it was McClatchy Newspapers, wasn't it, that just did exhaustive, real, live, honest-to-goodness journalism that showed that there was no contact, no connection, no Al-Qaeda in Iraq before we were in Iraq. Nope, sorry, no. Despite all of that, Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney has declared, well, in talking about the report that said, you know, no link, this is no operational link, but there was, as I recall from looking at it, extensive links with Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Egyptian Islamic Jihad was the organization headed by Zawahiri, and he merged EIJ with Al-Qaeda. Is that kind of like merging Bear Stearns with J.P. Morgan Chase? Never mind, sorry. When he merged EIJ with Al-Qaeda, when he became a deputy director of Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden's number two. I wish we could sort out who's going to be number two. We keep catching them and they keep promoting. What are we going to do? It's kind of like the Hydra, isn't it? Now, was that a link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda? Seems to me pretty clear that there was. The only problem about that whole Zarqawi thing is that to the extent that he was in Iraq before the war, he was in a part of Iraq that was absolutely independent of Saddam Hussein and couldn't have been touched by Saddam Hussein with a 40-foot battle lance. That's okay. Most of the, what was the word Gary used? Yeah, idiots who watch Fox didn't see that report in the first place, so yeah, no worries. And finally, as we contemplate things like deregulation and immunity, it's worth remembering the sage words of Representative Steve King. Steve. This is in response to an amendment passed by the House in regard to telecom immunity and in regard to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That amendment, of course, provides no retroactive immunity for the telecoms for all the times that they spied on you and spied on me and invaded our privacy, breached our homes via our phones, our email, our surfing habits, made us insecure, as the Fourth Amendment says, in our persons, papers, and effects. Electronic stuff is not exactly papers, so we'll qualify them under effects, and when you make the effects insecure, the person, by definition, therefore, is. But Representative Steve King was all burned up because of the absence of telecom immunity. And Representative Steve King, Iowa, couldn't understand why we wouldn't want to give immunity to the telecoms because immunity has worked so well in other sectors.
You know, we're here not really talking about the issues of rights. I haven't found anyone yet who has had their rights trampled on, their rights to reasonable...
Hey, jackass, how about going and talking to some Quakers? How about talking to the PETA people who got spied on for protesting at the Heavenly Ham store, and they weren't even protesting the war, you freak?
Full search and seizure, as the chairman announced from the beginning. As I look at what's going on here in policy, there's a situation going on right now in New York, in that area, where you have contractors that answered the call in the crisis of 911, and they're under lawsuits by the thousands, and I think we're in pretty much unanimous agreement that we should indemnify them for answering the call to protect America. I don't understand the difference between why we would not want to identify an information company that answered the call to protect America. To me, I think those are the closest two comparisons that we can get.
Okay, let's deal with that. The folks over at the Center for American Progress have noted that shortly after September the 11th, 2001, Congress appropriated $1 billion in federal emergency money, And that emergency money went to contractors and subcontractors who were working, you know, generally around ground zero. The idea was for that these contractors and subs to use the funds to set up a new insurance company that would cover potential claims arising out of the ground zero work. And they did. There's only one problem. And that is that the insurance company they set up suddenly fell madly in love with the $1 billion and doesn't want to give any of it away. It suddenly turned into, that's right, an insurance company, which, after all, is in the business of not paying claims. Welcome to Insurance 101. So now they are covered up in lawsuits from firefighters and cleanup crews, based on all the various and myriad dire illnesses that have been caused by making human beings work in unsafe working conditions. And what are the contractors who have set up their own little insurance company saying? Yeah. They are claiming that they are immune from lawsuit. Lawsuits brought by people who are really sick, who have really had dire chemical exposures, and some of whom may really, really die in a really, really horrifying fashion. And that is, of course, without discussing Representative Steve King. That's without discussing the immunity that has been showered, shall we say, upon outfits like Blackwater, who get to murder at will. Yeah, quit calling them Blackwater, they're Murder Incorporated. They killed 17 Iraqis in a Baghdad shootout. They killed a top Iraqi politician's bodyguard. They have shot at moving vehicles for the hell of it. They've held guns to our soldiers' heads. Yeah, that immunity's working out real well, Steve King. They're just dumb. What is it when, when Andy looks at Barney and says, "You just beat all, you know that? You just beat all." We need to have a member of Congress who's a Democrat whose only job is to stand up after these freaks and just say, "You just beat all, you know that? You just beat all." Do they even think before they put this stuff out there for general consumption? Ugh. Nah, I can't do any more with romantic Afghanistan. Travel to romantic Afghanistan. Shoot at romantic foreign fighters. Be shot at by them. Oh, darn. You mean you're too old? Gosh. Sorry, George. You can't come to romantic Afghanistan. I wonder how much play that got in the main, the so-called professional media. Oh, by the way, if you were a little bit, we talked at some length about Bear Stearns earlier. It's not the last. It wasn't the first. The New York Times reports the cash squeeze that brought Bear Stearns to its knees is fanning fears that other investment banks might be vulnerable to the crisis of confidence gripping Wall Street. Can we please stop calling these people banks? They're investment houses. They aren't banks. If they were banks, they'd be covered by the FDIC. Instead, they're investment houses and gambling dens, and then instead of being covered by the FDIC, they're covered by you and me. To which I rather object. But wait, investors are bracing for another volatile week in the markets as bankers and policymakers deal with the fallout from their bid to rescue Bear Stearns. Yeah, what was it, another quarter point Ben Bernanke took it down? That's more free money from you and me. I don't mind giving it all away, but could somebody, you know, give some to us? You know, you and me. And no, I don't mean $300. No, no. Because when you're shoring up a share price that had dropped from a high of 170-something down to $10 by Friday and gets sold at $2 a share and you and me wind up subsidizing the difference, I don't think it quite washes, do you? For now, the prospect of a new wave of consolidation in the beleaguered financial services industry seems remote. Oh, does it? That's because would-be acquirers and everyday investors alike have lost faith in the value that Wall Street firms are placing on their own assets. Yeah, it doesn't look good. But by the same token, these are not banks in the traditional sense of the word, nor should they be considered to be. Oh, it is just an absolute merry little chase that we find ourselves in. It's not so much the... But look, you know, this is all bought and paid for. You know, before we wrap up for the night, let's understand. This is all bought and paid for. Over the course of 28 years or more of ripping off pension plans and destroying the healthcare system and sucking every last bit of value out of the entire American marketplace, this is all bought and paid for. It was bought by the likes of Alan Schwartz, earning $16-plus million dollars a year to play flim-flam with phony mortgages. It was bought by Alan Schwartz. It was paid for by you. It's paid for by you at the pump. It's paid for by you in 4 1/4 a gallon gasoline, in the very staples of life going up in cost. It's paid for around the world by people who can't get the basic food that they need, because Alan Schwartz doesn't have quite enough money yet. Because Alan Schwartz has never learned the meaning of enough. So, I guess there are repercussions that I don't fully understand, but I am just a little bit confused by this idea that we live in a free market miracle, but when the free market that has been licking the hands of the silk suit crowd on Wall Street begins biting instead, that suddenly it's our job to get the dog away. Bears and bulls my rear end. This is just plain old-fashioned dogs. Junkyard ones at that. From the junk, you know, fed on the junk mortgages that they hustled all over America. November can't get here soon enough for me. January can't get here soon enough for me. It's not that misery loves company and I want to watch these bastards suffer. We're not going to get to watch. I just want to see them actually play by their own rules for once. Watch them get said to them the things that they say to the rest of us. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't bail you out, Mr. Schwartz. We don't have the money. I mean, isn't that what they said when we talked about bailing out the people who are actually losing their homes in the mortgage crisis? Too bad. We're sorry. We don't have the money to bail you out. That wouldn't be fair. The free market has to be left to do what it does, and it will correct itself, and everything will be okay. Well, yes, you might wind up living in a cardboard refrigerator box over a Subway grate, but you'll know that you're living there because the free market works. I just want to see somebody tell Alan Schwartz that. And I guess that makes me a hateful person. Guess I'll just have to live with it. So that's it for this evening. Wow, how did 9 p.m. Eastern Time get here so fast? Thanks, everybody. Thanks for some great conversation. Peter Godbold will be a rerun this evening after all. He wasn't planning on being one, but one of his clients is having a humongous crisis of some computing proportions, which he is compelled to deal with and has been all day long. He'll be back tomorrow night. Not sure about a horn section yet. Waiting to find out. John Fox will be around with All Foxed Up at midnight. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, the man who more or less saved liberal talk with WhiteRoseSociety.org. He, like we, needs your help. Again, thanks to those who put money in the kitty over the weekend. We sure do appreciate it. And now we're only, well, as of last check, we're only about $1,500 out, $1,300 out. Yeah, extra. Yeah, $1,300 out from our March goal. Thanks to the fine folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Working terribly hard to make the Appalachians the sustainable place that it must be in the future. Join them, crmw.net. Real easy. And always, 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 RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The number two ranking Republican senator plans to step down. Senator Trent Lott of Mississippi will resign by the end of the year, but is not exactly saying why. With 5 years to go in his current term, his powerful position on Capitol Hill could go to one of several colleagues, including John Kyle of Arizona or Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. President Bush greeted former Vice President Al Gore to the Oval Office for a private meeting and the traditional photo with the American 2007 Nobel Award winner. Also at tonight's state dinner, Mr. and Mrs. Bush will host diplomatic representatives from more than 40 countries who will attend tomorrow's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. Mr. Bush also signed a deal setting the foundation for a potential long-term U.S. troop presence in Iraq, with a round of details still to be negotiated. Iraq would gain full responsibility for internal security, and U.S. troops would be relocated to bases outside the cities. Iraqi officials foresee a long-term presence of around 50,000 troops. That's down from the current figure of more than 160,000. Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton is now running behind the top five Republican presidential contenders in general election matchups. That's according to a new poll. Senator Barack Obama and former Senator John Edwards both hold narrow leads over those same GOP contenders. Twin suicide bombings in Pakistan killed more than 20 policemen, ratcheting up pressure on President General Musharraf. 40 people were wounded, many of them critically. Vice President Dick Cheney has an irregular heartbeat, according to his doctors. The abnormality discovered today during a routine doctor's visit. He's undergoing further medical evaluation and will require moderate outpatient treatment. A powerful typhoon has slammed into northeastern Philippines, flooding 50 villages and killing at least 10 people. Two moderate earthquakes hit central Indonesia. That was over Sunday night. Early reports show 3 are dead, 45 injured, significant damage to some buildings. And in Southern California, residents still sifting through the ashes of a weekend wildfire that destroyed 53 homes in Malibu. Police think a campfire may have ignited the blaze. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
China will buy $15 billion worth of airplanes from European manufacturer Airbus. The 160-aircraft deal announced during